show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Begin countdown. 6... 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show. Thanks for joining us today. We hope to have an entertaining and informative program for you today. And, of course, you can help that along by joining the program. You can call us at 866-546-5254. And if you've got an unlimited call plan, want to use your nickel, why, you can call us at 941-876-6896. Love to have you join the program. We're going to have a lot going on today, all week long, actually. We've got a lot of plans for guests and so forth this week. Today, coming up at the bottom of the first hour, we're going to have James Paul with us. Jim is the executive director of the Global Policy Forum. And we want to talk with him about Alan Greenspan, talking about, finally somebody saying that, yes, in fact, the war is over oil. Isn't it something? You and I have all been saying that for how long now, ever since the war began? And everybody says, oh, ha, ha. But Alan Greenspan says, and oh, well, there's something to that. And, coming up in the second hour, we're going to have Doug Henwood with us. Doug is the editor of the Left Business Observer and author of the book Wall Street. And he, too, is going to talk a little bit about Alan Greenspan today and where we're at with these tax cuts and the economy and so forth. So we've got that to look forward to. And coming up in just a couple of minutes, we're going to have a friend of ours on the program that went to the march over the weekend in Washington, D.C. Good to have some comments about that. I've seen a lot about it. I noticed that Adam Kokesh and Tina Richards, two of our guests we had last week, were both at the march. Saw pictures of them there. And did any of you see that live, not just one, but about three live cams that they had on? You can catch that at a certain site in Washington, D.C. And they've got those traffic cams. You could actually watch that march going down the street live. It's pretty neat. Makes you wonder. They can watch us anywhere, anytime nowadays. If the traffic cam can do that, why, so can Big Brother, I guess. That's big news this afternoon. Ben Bernanke of the Fed cutting the prime rate a half a point. And, of course, last I heard, I haven't looked at it for a few minutes yet, the stock market had been going nuts over that, and we figured they would. It's most likely liable to be a very volatile week on Wall Street. And we've got several big companies going to give earnings reports throughout this week, and that'll affect the market. So look for a roller coaster ride, maybe. Or maybe it'll be straight up. I don't know. But it was anticipated that he would cut rates today, and he did. And the market has responded in kind. Of course, I don't know. My portfolio isn't going to move a whole lot. Is yours? It's funny. It almost seems abstract to talk about it. So many people do not have an interest in the market, and everybody says, well, yes, you do. The financial health of the country depends on the market. And here we are talking about trading paper, basically. Nothing manufactured. It's just a big paper. I don't know. It's not exactly a pyramid scheme, but just paper wealth. I remember one time back in the 80s, I think it was, maybe the 90s, Sam Walton overnight lost, I think it was $4 billion on the market when the market plunged. He said, hey, it was only paper anyway. I never had it in my pocket. So I guess that's one way to look at it. Where are we at today here? If we have time later on in the program, I certainly do want to talk about this oil deal between Hunt Oil Company and the Kurds. I'm by no means a conspiracy theorist. However, when Texas oil men are involved in the Bush administration, it's really time to start. It's time to start following the smell of oil and see where the scent of the black gold leads you. And we've known for several weeks now that Ray Hunt, on behalf of Hunt Oil, a Texas oil firm, has signed a deal with the Kurds to produce their oil. And we all need to be aware that Hunt is a member of the board of Halliburton. He's also a member of the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board, which is privy to classified information pertaining to Iraq and the surrounding region there. And Hunt also has been given massive contributions to Southern Methodist University and helped make that possible for Bush to build his presidential library on the campus, all two books, My Pet Goat and probably another one. He's also been a serious contributor to the Bush campaigns in the past. And you add all this to the information that Ray Hunt's airplanes have flown into Camp Perry. That's the camp in Virginia the CIA calls the farm. His airplanes have flown in there on several occasions and been seen. The camp trains paramilitary units, which played an important role in the Afghani war and Iraqi war. And there's also a black area there located on the premises, which serves as kind of a venue for secret diplomacy involving the Middle Eastern region, foreign leaders and agents and rebels and whoever they want to talk to quietly without the press being involved and without anybody knowing. They can be flown in secretly to that area to conduct talks with our government and the CIA. And there's really no need for visas and passports or customs or any of that falderal because the visits never officially happen. For example, we're aware of the fact that the Kurdish leaders were flown in to get their cooperation in toppling Saddam Hussein. No, nobody knew that in this country. It was all done secretly. And we also have information about visits by a Hunt-owned plane to the CIA's Camp Perry facility between the 27th and 28th of November in 2006. A civil aircraft registered to Hunt's oil holding company, Hunt Consolidated, made two visits to the CIA's Camp Perry training facility. Prior to flying into Camp Perry, it also made an overnight stop at Washington Dulles Airport. It made a briefer stop at Washington Dulles at the end of that visit after being to Camp Perry. Just in case you wonder, you see a plane you don't know, the registration number, which is always on all the planes, is N46F. And if stated, as by, you know, Bush stated in his speech Thursday night, is if it's our goal to prevent the country from splitting apart along ethnic lines, this contract should have been negotiated and signed through the Iraqi government, not just the Kurds. And this is only going to deepen their sense of complete independence, the Kurds, I'm saying, complete independence from Baghdad. Iraqi government officials should have been included to give some appearance, at least, of a unified Iraq controlling their resources. And adding to the problem is the undeniable fact that the presence of tens of thousands of American troops on Iraqi soil is without question undermining the ability of the Iraqi government to establish control over the entire country. And now with the Kurds signing their own oil deal, it shows that Maliki has little chance of attaining the power and the authority that he needs to bring stability to the government in Iraq. And so the question becomes here, and my question is, well, why then is it moral or ethical or even legal for a Bush insider to make his own deal with the Kurds, thus undermining the Iraqi government that Bush swears he's obliged to help? Why is Ray Hunt allowed to use the secret classified information he's privy to from being on the presidential commission to help himself to the riches of the Kurdish oil fields. Why is he allowed to act in direct opposition of the stated military and political goals of the Bush administration? Why did Bush himself allow this to happen so openly, so blatantly? And isn't this just absolute proof that the Bush administration's hell-bent upon keeping our forces in Iraq there indefinitely for the financial gain of his people? Is there a place, I wonder, in all this for the Carlyle Group? And so, again, this is either highly unethical or it's illegal. To be clear here, we have a president of the United States going before the American public on national TV and swear that he's working for a unified Iraq and that we'll establish a long-term partnership with the Iraqi government, thus keeping a large military presence in that area, most likely for decades to come. All the while, one of his cronies, in full view of anyone who wants to see it, is going through the back door and dealing directly with the Kurds, a move which further destabilizes the Iraqi government, Bush says he's trying to prop up. And doesn't this just further point out that we're being controlled by Bush's neocon group, a group with no conscience or compassion for a single person on this other earth other than themselves and their rich friends? That whole story just really disgusts me. It honestly does. Hey, we're going to pause for a quick break here, and when we come back, we're going to have one of our guests with us, and we'll talk about the big march that happened on Saturday.
But those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Are you a conservative Republican who believes George W. Bush did the right thing by invading Iraq? Are you in agreement with Mr. Bush when he says, we need to stay the course no matter how long it takes? Do you agree with the president when he says that he will never set any time schedule to pull out our troops? Well, if you agree with all that, then you'll certainly want to help out Mr. Bush by signing up your kids or grandkids for military service today. Yes, just call your local Army, Navy, Air Force, or Marine recruiter and tell them the age and social security number of your little Johnny or Susie and make an appointment for a free visit by your local military recruiter. We know that by supporting the president's war, you are a super patriot, and you'll want to be the first on your block to offer up your kids for Mr. Bush's war. Don't worry if you think they're too young. Even if they're only 10 or 11 years old, this war will certainly last long enough for them to get involved. And for the first 15 callers, we're offering absolutely free a CD of the president uttering those famous fighting words, bring 'em on. Yes, this CD will have special meaning to you, especially if your kid is wounded or killed in Iraq. So call now and get your child or grandchild registered today. Just call 1-800-TAKE-MY-KID. That's 1-800-TAKE-MY-KID.
Somebody love me like she do.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. Kind of a, hot and humid afternoon here in Southwest Florida. How is it where you're at? I hope you're having a nice day. Guys, I'm sure all of you heard about the tornadoes we had in the area the other day. A lot of damage over here in a town called Cape Coral, not far away. Hey, enough for the weather forecast and so forth. I promise you that we'd have somebody on to talk about the March Saturday, and we do. We have a longtime acquaintance and good friend, Glenda, on the phone with us. Glenda, welcome to the Guy James Show.
Hey, thanks, Guy. How are you?
Well, I'm good, and I understand that you. I knew we talked about it. I knew you were going to the March Saturday, and I wonder if you'd tell us a little bit about it. First of all, where did you gather? Did you all start over at Lafayette Park? Is that where it started out?
That's exactly right. We met at Lafayette Park. Started out kind of slow, but right at noon when it was supposed to start, I mean, you could just see the crowds everywhere. I was up towards the front. So I actually walked to the back so I could get a better view. I mean, they were saying how many people were there. But to see it, I stood up on one of the pedestals. To see it was just too awesome. Hmm. I mean, 100,000, they're saying 100,000 people.
Were you on the area of the park furthest away from the White House or up toward the Pennsylvania Avenue there?
It was actually right in the center.
Okay.
So they had protesters up in front of the White House that were holding up signs. And the best thing was, and this had the biggest impact on me, they had a group of young kids from George Washington University. There were probably, I'm guessing, 250 of them that must have met a block away. And they all marched right up on, and right in front of the White House, and it was George Washington University, Democrats against the war. And it was just so refreshing to see all those young kids, and they're all chanting anti-war, and it was just phenomenal.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, their campus is just about three blocks up the street.
Right. That could be where they met up.
Oh, terrific. And so you gathered a large crowd there, and you had some speakers set up. Where were the speakers set up? And by the way, did you know we were watching you?
Where was it at? Was it on live?
Yeah. Well, Washington, D.C. has these traffic cams all over the place, and you can log on the Internet, and it refreshes every 2 seconds, so we could see what you were doing every couple of seconds.
I did not know that.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes,
interesting.
I'll have
you
to share.
You got a bird's eye view.
Yeah, I did. I was trying to find you. I was trying to find people I knew, but it was difficult because it was like a still picture, and then it would refresh every two seconds. But it's kind of neat being able to see everybody on there.
Oh, excellent. I bet it was.
Yeah, I'll off the air, I'll share that with you, the site, so you can you can see where you were sans the people. So once the speeches were given and all, you headed en masse down toward the Capitol building, right?
Yeah, you know, but to go back to those speeches, I mean, they had some, great speakers. They had, of course, the Iraq veterans against the war, who were the ones that really were heading up along with the Answer Coalition. They spoke, and it just, touched your heart. And they had people from Gold Star Families for Peace, and they were all talking about their family members that they've lost to this crazy war. And it was just, I mean, the moving, and, it was all, it wasn't political. It was all, stop this badness, end this war now.
A couple of our guests that we had last week, I believe, spoke. Adam Kokesh, and he's in the Veterans Against the War, and Tina Richards, I'm sure they both spoke. In fact, I know they did.
Absolutely. Straight from the heart, too.
Oh, yes. And so you started down toward the Capitol building. Now, that's a pretty good trek from there, isn't it?
Yeah, well, yes, it is. Yeah, but it was, I think you get so much more from the buildings. You're right in the center of this 8-lane road, and you're right in the center, and you're seeing everything up close and personal. And everybody's yelling and screaming, 100,000 people. And they're all, screaming, anti-war chants. And, I mean, it was just so refreshing. It restored my faith.
Did you march right down Pennsylvania Avenue or on the sidewalks? How did you do it?
No, they had all the roads closed off. For two blocks on either side as you were coming up on the crossroads, they had tons and tons of D.C. police that had the roads blocked off, so all the traffic was closed for two blocks on either side of the they actually had the whole, road closed off to make a path, which, it's 8 lanes long, and they said it was stretched back 10 full blocks.
Mm. Actually,
so it was pretty, it had to be pretty awesome to see from the sky, I'm sure.
I'm looking at a picture right now of where it came to the corner of Pennsylvania and where the Treasury Building is there, and then heads up past the Willard Hotel and down through there. Now, the street is completely full in this picture I see here, so I know it was a good group. So you marched all the way to the Capitol. How about the doings that took place at the Capitol steps? Were you in on that? Did you see a lot of it?
Well, you know what? I have to tell you that. You know, I was a little, it was pretty intimidating. They had the police, as we got to the Capitol, in full riot gear, of course. They had their shields and everything. And it really was a little scary for me. They had people that I knew that had signed up for the die-in and for the, to be arrested. You know, which is why it made national news. If nobody had gotten arrested, they would have never made the national news.
That's right.
So, when we got up towards that, it really got to be very intimidating for me, which I know might surprise you because you know me. But I was torn with wanting to join in, which scared me even more, and then wanting to back off. And you know, when they started with the die-in, I was right up front because we were towards the front of the march. And as they started, people started going over the barrier because they were really being. I was just really, you know, the presence of those cops wanted to be known, and they were with their riot gear. And when people started passing to go onto the steps of the Capitol, it got a little scary for me, and I have to say that was when I kind of backed off and the crowds kind of overtook. I allowed the crowds. So I saw a few of them getting arrested, but they were doing it very passively. But as I understand, it didn't stay that way. So that was when I backed off, and we started head back to the Amtrak station.
By and large, over Union Station, is that where you came in?
That's exactly where.
We good.
Came in from Baltimore.
Well, you weren't very far away at that point then from the Capitol.
No, thank God, yeah.
Yeah.
It was, you know, that's the other funny thing. On our way to D.C. from Baltimore, we were at a small stop in between, at the airport stop, which is between Penn Station and you know, Baltimore. And there were probably, I don't know, 20 people standing there. It's on a Saturday, not a busy day. And I saw a lady with a peace sign, and I went up to her because I thought she'd be a local, and I wanted to ask her directions once I got off of there. She came from Oregon. She had she has a son who's serving his second tours in Afghanistan, and she came from Oregon by herself to come to this march, and she was one of the volunteers there.
Oh, man.
And another kid that we met that was on the same train at this little stop that we were at came from San Francisco, 28-year-old kid, came from San Francisco just for the march. So I knew it was going to be great.
This is your first experience with this, right?
The first one. Yeah, little local ones, but this is my first time to D.C.
Yeah, and so you...
When I first heard about it was probably July. I think that's when they started letting everybody know about it by way of Internet, of course, not by our news media. But about in July, and I immediately knew I was going. I knew I had to do something.
So your overall impression, what was accomplished, how did you feel when you came home?
Well, you know, I mean, it's the first one to hit the national news. I mean, I saw it on the local Baltimore news that night. I saw it on CNN. My friend from Chicago called me and told me they showed even more of it in Chicago than they showed in Baltimore. They actually showed the die-in, which they didn't show on the local Baltimore station. So she saw even more than I did. And if it, you know, they're saying the numbers. They're saying the 100,000 people. And I mean, it kind of restored my faith. You know, it's disappointing sometimes to feel that nobody cares about it.
Well, I know you live in a small town now, and sometimes when we're in a smaller area, we feel like feel like we're alone, especially in an area where you and I live, which is a hardcore right-wing Republican. But we feel as though maybe we're the only ones that feel, but it's heartening, isn't it, to go to a place like that and join in with so many friends that are like-minded about this war.
Absolutely. I mean, it honestly restored my faith that we can really do something before any more die. I mean, something, and that was the big thing was impeach, impeach, impeach. I mean, almost everybody was saying it. Mm. And I think we really need to look further into that. To wait until January of 09, it's just not good enough for these boys.
Well,
they deserve better than that.
It's the way the Vietnam War ended, and if this war is to be ended, it'll be ended by the people in the same fashion. And I'm proud of you for going. I'm proud of all the people I know that went, and It will have an everlasting effect upon you, and thanks for letting us know all about it today, Glenda.
You're quite welcome, sir.
Thanks very much. Glenda, who attended, and I know there are lots of you listening that attended the march also Saturday. It was an important time, and I wish I could have been there myself. I was there just, a week before that, a week or two, but couldn't be there for that one. We're going to pause for, what do we have here right now? Oh, we got a song called What Have They Done? This was sent me today, an anti-war song in the true spirit of the old anti-war songs. What Have They Done by Woody Deans. You're going to like this.
A racket, and fear is just a tactic to pull the wool over our eyes. Future isn't certain, there's a man behind the curtain, he hides behind his clever disguise. For peace to prevail, the truth must be unveiled. And I'll feel much better when George Bush is in jail. Poor Dick Cheney with a smirk on his face, he's laughing all the way to the bank. His Halliburton stock has gone through the roof, there's oil for Humvees and tanks. For peace to prevail, the truth must be unveiled. And I'll feel much better when Dick Cheney's in jail. What have they done? The king's cronies, the idiot son. World order's begun. Lord, forgive them. They know not what they've done.
And welcome back to the Guy James Show. Thank you, everybody, for being with us this afternoon. As promised, let's get right on with it here. Promised you we'd have an interesting guest this half hour, and we have with us the executive director of a group we've talked about considerably on this program, the Global Policy Forum, and James Paul is with us. Jim, welcome to the program.
Nice to be with you, Guy.
We primarily invited you on today to talk about this stunning revelation over the weekend that our former Fed chairman, Alan Greenspan, is saying this war, as it turns out, is kind of about oil. What do you think about that? Were you surprised he said that?
Well, I was a little surprised that Greenspan said it. I was not surprised that the war was about oil, because I've been, since 2002, I've been writing about that, and I felt that that was it. So it was really quite thrilling, actually, that somebody as definitive and knowledgeable as Alan Greenspan told us this, because there's a lot of people just don't want to face that reality. But Greenspan, interestingly, is not somebody who's revealing something that he disagrees with. He's actually telling us that it was about oil, and he's glad about it. That he, in fact, even says that he lobbied with the president to go ahead with the war on that basis.
Well, isn't it something? You've mentioned it for some time now. I've mentioned it for some time. A lot of people have mentioned it for some time that we felt this war was about oil. Even before it started, we thought it would be about oil. And yet, until Alan Greenspan comes along and says, oh, it's about oil, why, there was no credence given to this whatsoever. But millions of people have thought so, or at least, well, I don't know how many million, but quite a few of us. And yet, Alan Greenspan goes on 60 Minutes Sunday evening and says it, and all of a sudden it's gospel. It, I don't
know. That's right. I mean, that's the way the information system works, and lots of intellectuals are very cautious about this kind of thing, that as soon as you start mentioning the responsibility of big multinational companies and people, the President of the United States and people like that, people start getting weak-kneed. So this is usually what happens. We wait 5 years, we wait 10 years, and then we find out what is really going on. Greenspan's told us. I think what we now need to see is some of the revelations of who was discussing with whom. Greenspan says he was lobbying, and the thing is that I think we can be sure that the heads of the big multinational oil companies were lobbying too, but they keep their activities very, very secret, and no one in the government is talking about that yet. We'll learn that soon enough.
Well, we talked a little bit earlier in the program today about Ray Hunt. Hunt's corporation having signed an agreement with the Kurds recently. And I know that your organization is expert on the whole region over there right now. But here we have the president on the one hand pledging to help form a unified Iraq with a unified central government in Baghdad, and here we have one of his cronies on one of his own panels signing his own deal with the Kurds, more or less spitting in the eye of Maliki.
Well, that's right, but I think that we have a situation where the oil companies are hedging their bets. They're making their biggest bet, I would say, on a federal structure, and that the Exxon and Chevron and the biggest companies are still on the sidelines. Hunt Oil is important, but it's certainly nothing like the big majors. Total of France, BP, Shell, and so on. And I would say their main bet is with this oil law, and that's why the U.S. government is pressing very, very hard on an oil law to be passed by the Iraqi parliament that would essentially lead the way to the privatization of the oil prospecting and oil development in Iraq. And this is something that's opposed by a very large percentage of the people of Iraq. That's been, we, the Policy Forum, was involved along with a number of others in funding and putting in place a public opinion poll in June, and two out of three Iraqis were opposed to this kind of a thing. They believe that Iraq is best off without these big companies, as it in the same way that most of the countries in the region have been developing their own oil through their national companies.
Well, they have a history to look back upon about people coming in from outside countries and taking their wealth, taking a good portion of it. And this oil law, forgive me for not having the exact percentages at my fingertips, but doesn't it give where it's somewhere around 75% of the profit of the oil to the outside companies and give, as we used to say down on the farm, they got the corn and we got the cobs? Isn't that the way it turns out?
Well, it's not quite like that. The hydrocarbon law actually opens the way for what are called production sharing agreements, and the actual details of those agreements are not specified. It allows for agreements over a period of time, a long period of time. It allows for various structures of oversight. But it doesn't specify what the deal is actually going to be. There's a certain amount of speculation though about what those kind of deals are likely to be at this point. And I think we could say, without any, worry of being wrong, that the companies are going to call the shots, that, probably more than half of the total revenue stream, maybe 60% even or more, is going to go to the companies, and they're going to control the amount of oil that's going to be pumped. They're going to control the marketing. They're going to control everything about that oil. And most of the companies in the region and the other big producers in the world all control nationally these kinds of things, and so they're not beholden to the international companies. So there's my estimate, there's about 200 billion barrels of oil in Iraq. Most experts think there's 112 billion barrels that are already in the proved reserves, and it's quite likely that there's quite a lot more, probably up to 200, possibly even beyond. And because of the cost of production are so low in Iraq, some estimate that it's about $1 a barrel. And so if you can sell the stuff at $70 a barrel, $80 a barrel, and your cost is $1, you're obviously making it $79 profit on each barrel you sell. And if you multiply that times 20 billion, you see the kind of gigantic profits that we're talking about. We're talking about $10 to $20 trillion in what the economists call the rent, which would be divided, that's kind of like the profit, which would be divided between the government and the companies. And so the Iraqis are saying, why should we turn over to the companies trillions of dollars when we can easily get the money for this these capital investments on the international money markets, and we can hire international experts to help us, and we can go ahead with that. But nobody, whether it's the government or the companies, is going to be throwing a lot of money into Iraqi production until things get settled down out there. And I think that if the oil issue is one of the things that's going to keep that country in turmoil, and if the United States insists on staying there and staying in occupation and keeping its military forces with their, insisting on getting these kind of oil deals, then Iraq is going to be a pretty sad place for a long time.
Well, on the one hand, a lot of people think that, the country won't come under control, and it won't be able to produce the oil in the proper fashion, in a maximum efficiency rate as they could, without some sort of stability given by the U.S. military. But on the other hand, the truth is, it seems to be fostering more violence and therefore working against total production the way that it ought to be. Even though the Iraqis are sitting on their own resources, the billions of barrels you're talking about, they are not in a position of strength right now, are they, to deal with the international banking system and get the money they need for all this?
Well, that's right. But nobody's going to be able to produce much oil there right now. And things have to be straightened out politically and from a security vantage point before there can be any really serious forward planning and any really serious investment. Although it should be said that there are some of these fields that are pretty far out in the desert, and they're not probably they're not that difficult to protect. But even so, it's up to the Iraqi people to decide how they're going to organize their oil system. And right now, these decisions, the United States government, and of course including the Congress in this case, and both parties, are trying to push the Iraqis to take, you know, these hugely important steps at a time that's completely inappropriate. There's plenty of time out ahead after Iraqis get things sorted out and after the occupation is over. That's when is the appropriate time. After the occupiers have packed up and gone away, and the Iraqis will be in a much better position, and there'll be legitimacy to these decisions. If their decisions are taken now and seen to be taken under the gun of the occupation, those decisions are likely to come unraveled later on.
Well, Jim, I know we've only got a couple of minutes left, and I did want to ask you. You mentioned about long range, the long range perspective of all this. This probably won't, in my opinion, won't be the last war that's fought for oil. I think someday the strongest will be fighting for the last drop of the stuff. But will any country on earth, any small country, not having the military power bus of the Chinese or the Russians or the English or French, or any nuclear power country, will any small country be free of outside interference of having a country like ours come in and invade them and take our oil and take their oil?
Well, I mean, that was an important slip. I mean, I think that you're...
Yeah, that's a...
Actually, I think
Freud would love
people,
that one.
A lot of you, I know you don't think that, but I mean, a lot of people in this country do think that, you know, those Iraqis are sitting on our oil, and, hey, it's you know, what are they doing not handing it over? Well, we'll see. I mean, there's some very big questions here, which have to do with... global warming and whether or not we're going to see a big crunch, as they say, peak oil. I think that peak oil is with us already, that the demand for oil worldwide is going up steadily, unfortunately, but the actual available oil is pretty much peaked out. So there's certain to be price hikes in the years ahead, but it's about time that the countries of the world recognize that we can't be burning this stuff anymore, and coal and natural gas too, and it's time to turn over to sustainable energy sources, and that there's a compelling reason that it goes beyond the security reason alone. And it's much more serious that our whole, global climate is in a very bad way, and we've got to stop using this stuff. And so, the case that as the price starts to skyrocket, there's going to be transitions to more sustainable energy sources anyway. I hope so.
Well, one can only hope. As long as that greed factor's in there with the price it is now, and like you said, the low production costs there may be in Iraq, I hope we're not in for a lot more trouble. Jim, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. I do want to mention to everybody that you've got I think published in June of this year, 133-page dissertation on the war and occupation in Iraq. It's the most comprehensive report that I have seen, and we'll give your website and so forth after we let you go here, globalpolicy.org, and our listeners will most assuredly read that. Jim, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. It's important to hear your views, and our listeners thank you, and I thank you.
Thanks. Nice to be with you, Connor. Take care. Bye.
Bye now. Black gold. They don't call it that for nothing. I would encourage everybody to go to globalpolicy.org, and there is a 133-page report on there, a very, very comprehensive report on this war. And I don't think it's any secret to anybody now that this war was fought for oil. It continues to be fought for oil and to enrich the oil companies and, dare I say, friends of the Bush family. Remember, this was a president. This was a president who bragged about his association with oil companies, he and the vice president, and how good it would be for the American people to elect them. And he would get them to, and this is an exact quote, get them to turn on the spigot over there so that we could have cheap oil again. So it didn't quite work out very well, did it? No. You can call the program, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. Love to have you join us here on the program today. We'll be talking about some more about Alan Greenspan, and frankly, I was appalled at the interviews with Alan Greenspan over the weekend. Some of the things he said that I think we've all known, but it just, I don't know, to have it so blatantly in your face. Well, yeah, it's about oil. Of course it's about oil. We're going to be back in just a moment or two.
There's something in the way she moves, or looks my way, or calls my name, that seems to leave this troubled world behind. If I'm feeling down blue, or troubled by some foolish game, she always seems to make me change my mind. I feel fine anytime she's around me now. She's around me now almost all the time. And if I'm well, you can tell that she's been with me now. She's been with me now quite a long, long time, and I feel fine. Every now and then, the things I lean on lose the meaning, and I find myself careening in places where I should not let me go. She has the power to go when no one else can find me. Yes, and to silently remind me of the happiness and good times that I know. Well, I said I just got to know them. It isn't what she's got to say, or how she thinks, or where she's been. To me, the words are nice the way they sound. I'd like to hear them best that way. It doesn't much matter what they mean. Well, she says they're mostly just to calm me down. And I feel fine anytime she's around me now. Well, she's around me now almost all the time. And if I'm well, you can tell that she's been with me now. She's been with me now quite a long, long time. Yes, and I feel fine.
You are listening to the Guy James Show. And I thank you for being with us this afternoon. Talking about Alan Greenspan right now, and I don't know. It wasn't really a revelation to me, and I know to none of you. We've all suspected all along that this war is being fought for oil. But Corey Stone on the chat room brought up an interesting subject, and it's something that I planned on talking about anyway. Thank you, Corey Stone, for bringing that up. Isn't it something how these people can propagandize the American people to such a great extent? We had Greenspan talking about on the interview over the weekend about the tax cuts. And do you remember, do you not remember, I know you all remember, or to use the phraseology of the bureaucrats when they go from here, do you recollect, that when Bush was trying to get his tax cuts done, he brought in Alan Greenspan to the whole thing. He dropped Alan Greenspan's name constantly. Well, Alan Greenspan thinks tax cuts are a good idea. Alan Greenspan. And he not only sold it to the American public, but he sold it to the Congress that way. Alan Greenspan, the god of financial matters here in this country, says tax cuts are good, so let's do it. And they did. And here we have Alan Greenspan saying, well, yes, I did say maybe we needed some tax cuts, but I wasn't talking about the tax cuts Bush was talking about. He says that now. Where the hell was he back then? Why didn't he speak up then? Because, truth be told, he was a lackey just like everybody else, that he would kowtow to the Bush administration, and did. And he hasn't said a word against them until after he got out. Where's the independence of these people when they're in office? Where's the patriotism and the loyalty to the people of this country, not to the administration, when they're in their offices? And to bring up a prime example of this, Greenspan says in his book that it was so important to get Saddam, and I'll quote him, he said he felt getting Saddam out of there was very important because he was convinced the Iraqi dictator wanted to control the Strait of Hormuz, through which a sizable portion of the world's oil passes. He conveyed that view to Cheney and Rumsfeld. Well, hey, those of you that are, and I know this is not a trait of the American people to be that enamored with geography nowadays, but those of you, and I know most of my listeners are, most of you who are familiar with the map of that area, and you look at the Strait of Hormuz, yes, it is true that if somebody does control that, they're going to control the flow of oil. There's no question of that. But it sure as hell wasn't going to be Saddam Hussein. It absolutely wasn't going to be Saddam Hussein. He didn't have a port that he could. He had no navy. We had the navy in the. What was Saddam Hussein's navy going to do, or Air Force? What was it going to do against the United States Navy out there in the Gulf? What? Iraq didn't. They weren't near the strait. Saddam had no navy to speak of at all, a couple little gunboats or something, I think. After that first Gulf War, they got rid of, we destroyed most of it. There was no Air Force. He didn't have enough ground troops to fight his way across to get to the Straits of Hormuz. It simply was not practical. It was not possible for him to do so. And yet we had at the time, we had people like Alan Greenspan and the Bush administration, the Cheneys and Rumsfeld, saying, oh, my God, what if Saddam Hussein got a hold of the Straits of Hormuz? He was not going to get a hold of the Straits of Hormuz. Absolutely, positively not. You know it. I know it. They knew it. And yet they used that on us. And only now does Alan Greenspan come out and say, well, you know, it made no sense. It didn't make any sense when he said it then. It makes no sense now. I only bring this up to point out the massive propaganda campaign that these people are willing to use on the American public to get their way. They will say anything, do anything, and they have done so. I find it simply amazing that this goes on, and the reason it goes on is because we have an ill-informed public. Or an apathetic public. And really, when it comes down to it, when you take all the numbers in consideration, we have an ill-informed, apathetic public. And so the Bush administration can come out from their bully pulpit and say anything they want, and they did. Oh, they did, all right. And the people buy it. The American people absolutely bought it. And that's why we're in this war today, because everybody sat back and said, well, okay, it could have been stopped. If there had been a great outcry by the American people, it could have been stopped. Instead, all we had crying out against it was this tiny majority of us who have been against it since the very beginning. Since we first saw that gleam in Bush's eye that he was actually going to get a chance to go out and avenge his daddy and make some money for the oil, his oil buddies as well. We knew this. And yet it happened anyway. And in talking to our last guest, I think it's clear. And by the way, do go to globalpolicy.org. Globalpolicy.org. A lot of great reading there. You want to make yourself an expert on the on that region and what's going on there and what it has gone on there and the future, go read it. Globalpolicy.org. You will love that site if you like to bring yourself up to speed on everything that's going on in that region. But I think we have not fought our last war for oil. And I think as it gets more and more precious, those with the biggest guns are going to be going after it and we'll make any excuse we have to go after it. That doesn't make it right. That's wrong. It's completely wrong. And that Freudian slip I made during our conversation with Jim, we'd be going after their oil. You know, there are a lot of Americans that look at it that way. It's our oil. If we can take it, it's ours. And I know people who think that way. I know you know people who think that way. If we've got the military might to go in and take it and we need it, why, it's ours. That is the view of the neocon establishment in this country. If there's oil anywhere in this world that we need, by God, we will go and take it. Because we're the rulers of the world. We're the strongest in the world. As we go, so goes the rest of the world. And so we got to keep our economy going. And if we have to steal somebody else's oil, take it by force, we will do so. All the while telling us how good it is for whatever country we're invading that they're going to have flowers and candy and all that kind of stuff welcoming us into their country to steal their natural resources. So here we are, and the oil reserves of the country are pretty much known where they're at. And I think you can pretty much point to where future wars will be fought. I do. Question is, will the American military, the American government have enough power and influence and money to fight wars for oil anymore? I hope we do have the money and the power to be capable of that. I just hope we don't do that. I hope we have the ethics as a country to do what's right. And yes, we need to fight for our survival, but there are other people on this planet besides us. And the neocons need to understand that, because they sure as hell don't right now. They sure as hell don't. It's our oil. We'll take it if we want to. That's the idea. Well, let me see here. I don't have time to take a call right now. We've got a couple of calls waiting. I'm not going to take a call right now because top of the hour is coming up pretty quickly. We'll have our guest, Doug Henwood, going to be on to talk some more about Alan Greenspan and this whole business of war over oil and the tax cuts. So stick with us. We're going to have an interesting program the rest of the afternoon, and we've got some good shows lined up for this week, some of the guests we have, and we'll talk about that a little later on in the program today. So don't go away. You're listening to The Guy James Show on the Hit On Radio Network. We'll be back right after the news. I trust you will be with us. We'll be right back.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush's nomination for Attorney General is receiving praise from both Republicans and Democrats. The president announced his choice yesterday, retired New York Judge Michael Mukasey. The Senate must confirm Mukasey before he can fill the position vacated by Alberto Gonzalez. Tensions are building over blunt remarks from the French foreign minister regarding Iran's continued mocking of international demands to stop its nuclear enrichment program. Bernard Kouchner said the world should prepare for a possible war with Iran. Russia's foreign minister walked away from a meeting with Kouchner saying, quote, "It's hard to imagine what that could do to the region," end quote. Kouchner went on to tell a French reporter that he does not want it to be said that he's a warmonger. In remarks prepared for Congress today, National Intelligence Chief Mike McConnell says China and Russia are spying on the U.S. He says the nation needs laws legalizing domestic snooping to protect the country from those traditional enemies. A high-ranking Taliban chief was killed today in a U.S. airstrike in southern Afghanistan. Police say the commander was responsible for the abduction of those 23 South Korean Christian missionaries in July. Iraqi officials are reviewing the status of all private security firms operating in the region. The action follows the immediate expulsion of private U.S. security firm Blackwater, whose mercenaries killed 8 civilians and an Iraqi policeman in a gun battle in Baghdad on Sunday. Iraqi officials say the contractors randomly fired into a crowd, but the Blackwater soldiers are claiming self-defense as they guarded a convoy of U.S. State Department officials they were hired to protect. A group of women are petitioning the King of Saudi Arabia on Sunday for the right to drive. Analysts say the women's demands will likely be rejected, saying letting women drive would be allowing them to mix freely with men. 14 of the 140 inscribed panels that comprise the Vietnam Veterans Memorial in Washington have been vandalized. United States Park Police say an oily substance was smeared on the black granite September 7th. In addition to damage to the panels, the entire length of the curb was marred as well. Crews are working cautiously to clean the memorial while not causing any further damage in the process. A storm described by meteorologists as a super typhoon is headed toward Shanghai. You're listening to the Quality News Network. More next.
You know you can depend on QNN for honest news. Now we want you to know about an honest source of information on one of the country's most desirable vacation destinations, Carmel by the Sea on California's beautiful Central Coast. That source is the best address in Carmel, carmel.com. Just a few simple clicks and you're visiting a website that mirrors all that Carmel stands for. Quality, character, tradition, beauty, the great outdoors by the sea, cultural heritage, and the best shopping. Charming inns, superb dining, world-class art, music, and theater. A cornucopia of delights. So when you're planning your next getaway, go to the best address in Carmel, carmel.com, for tips on everything Carmel. Then put that information to good use by visiting Carmel by the Sea for an unforgettable getaway. Carmel.com.
A meteorite that landed in Peru has sickened 10 to 12 people who got close to the glowing object with symptoms of nausea and migraines. An environmental cleaning crew has been sent to the resulting 100-foot diameter crater to take earth and water samples. They should have their results back from a lab in Lima in about a week. Both New York State and New York City have filed a lawsuit against Merck. They're accused of the company's accused of defrauding government health insurance programs, including Medicaid, by deliberately concealing the serious heart risks associated with the painkiller Vioxx. China has raised interest rates for the fifth time this year. This is an attempt to cool their sizzling economy and lower their skyrocketing inflation. E-Trade has dropped its wholesale mortgage business. The company has also lowered its profit forecast for the year by 25%. Housing foreclosures last month surged 36% from July, and they were up a whopping 115% versus August a year ago. California, Nevada, and Florida had the lion's share of the foreclosures. The Federal Reserve meets at 2:15 this afternoon. Many expect a cut in the interest rates. On that news, the Dow is up 83 points. The NASDAQ's up 12, and the S&P 500 has gained 11. Concerns that demand will exceed supply this winter spurred the price of oil to break a record yesterday. Right now, it sits at $81.34 a barrel. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Michael Coleman.
Throw the second switch! Throw the third switch!
show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Begin countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Billy Shears, music director. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. We've got a good second hour coming up. We're going to have Doug Henwood. He's the editor of Left Business Observer and the author of the book Wall Street. And we're going to take a talk a little bit more about Alan Greenspan and so forth. See, the market was up right before we went on, and I noticed during the news there, it's I think it's still up. Half a point cut on the prime today, so I guess that'll do it for a while. All the speculators will be out there jumping up and down. One thing I want to mention, as you well know, I talked about it last week, the MoveOn.org ad. And I know that many of us have different feelings about that ad. Do I think that ad was 100% correct? Absolutely. Absolutely. There's nothing in that ad that wasn't true. Do I think it was a good idea to do it and when they did it, how they did it? No, I don't. And I know many of you disagree with me on that. I think MoveOn.org should have been a little more cagey about the whole thing and not given these people the ammunition to allow them to get everybody to take their eye off the ball, because that's all they've been screaming for a week now. MoveOn.org, MoveOn.org, hey, look over here. Don't look at the truth of the situation in Iraq. Don't look at the obvious deficiencies and lies and distortions in Petraeus and Crocker's testimony. Don't look at that. Look at MoveOn.org. And so it gave them the ammunition to push this whole thing over to the side of the stage and take it over and yell about MoveOn.org. And although I certainly agree with the ad of MoveOn.org, I don't agree that they should have done it and given them the ammunition to do what they've done, because, as you know, they control the media and they've made hay with that. They certainly have. However, it is comforting to know that they didn't get a long way with it, because the new polls out by the CBS News yesterday, prior to Bush's speech, there were 11% of the American people that thought, 11% thought that we should increase troops there. Now that figures down to 6%. Prior to Bush's speech, about 19% of the American people said that the troop level should be kept the same. Now it's 21%. Prior to Bush's speech, 35% of the people said the number of troops should be reduced. Now that figures up to 39%. And prior to Bush's speech, 30% of all troops, 30% of the people thought we should remove all troops, and now that's at 29%. So it appears that Bush's speech, anyway, didn't have any long-lasting effect on the American public. Didn't have any at all. In fact, if anything, this poll went against him on that. But back to the blatant obfuscation of Petraeus during his testimony at the hearings. I know some of you have heard this, and I heard it, and I was outraged when I did, and I know Petraeus knows this. It was, what, a week ago today? This is Tuesday? He started his rounds on Capitol Hill. Petraeus went around, and he did all his reporting and all that, blah, 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 blah. But 10 days ago, Petraeus's commanders in Baghdad. Now remember, we have Petraeus up there telling us how, oh, we're doing a really good job, and I'll be able to bring some troops home soon, and things are going swimmingly. Anbar province is, it's erected a rose garden out there. Things are going so well. And portions of Baghdad, completely safe. You heard the story. But Petraeus knew this. 10 days ago, his commanders in Baghdad began advertising for private contractors to work in combat supply warehouses on U.S. bases throughout Iraq. Because half the soldiers who had been working in the warehouses were needed for patrols, combat, and protection of U.S. forces. With the increased insurgent activity, unit supply personnel must continue to pull force protection along with convoy, escort, and patrol duties, according to a statement of work that accompanied the September 7th request from the U.S. military. The September 7th request for bidders from Multinational Force Iraq. So on the one hand, we have Petraeus saying, oh, things are going so well, you know. And on the other hand, we've got the United States military advertising for private contractors to take the place of soldiers who are needed out in the field. I don't know of a more blatant lie you could tell than that. And yet there he sat, with his rows of ribbons on his uniform, backed up by a whole row of guys sitting. These people know how to stage things, don't they? The first row right behind Petraeus with, a half dozen or so with equal number of ribbons on their chest and jewelry on their shoulders. They really presented this thing right. They did a good job, I have to admit. They did. Greatest propagandists this country has ever seen. I don't think there's any question about it. None. The Democrats, as we talked about last week on this program, the only way we're going to end that war on our terms is to defund it. And more and more and more Democrats now, you're starting to hear, oh, no, we couldn't do that. Oh, no, I won't do that. I won't pull the rug. The same old political bullshit that we've been hearing all along. Democrats are in that trap. You know, if they had done the right thing in the first place, by not requiring a timeline to get out, and by folding on that issue, which they did, they crawled under their rocks one more time, or under their desk, or wherever it is they hide. If they'd have just done the right thing in the first place, forget the political reasons for anything else. If he'd have just done the right thing because it was the right thing to do. But they didn't. And evidently, I don't know what's wrong with the Democratic leaders. But evidently, they still feel like once in a while they want to trust Bush. I don't know. But they caved in. They didn't demand and get a timeline for our withdrawal from Iraq. And now, what they've done by doing that is letting Bush call the shots. You heard Bush say he wanted to find some common ground on Iraq. Well, there's no common ground of what we want and what is actually being done. There's no common ground there. God, I wish the Democrats in Congress weren't so weak. And I know some of them hate it when you say that. I've heard from a couple of them. They hate it when we say that. But it's so true. I know there's some there with some guts. Some with some of the cojones to do the right thing. But, you know, they're just fooling themselves. George Bush is going to continue to have his way with the Democrats over this war. You know it. I know it. The only way we're going to get it done is to have massive rallies like they had last Saturday, and they have to be 10 times as big as that one, and they're going to have to be every week all over the country. And I don't know. I don't know if that's going to be the case. I think if this war is going to be ended, it's going to have to be ended because the people took it in their hands to do it, not the Democratic politicians. Oh, yes, there are a handful saying, let's defund it. But not nearly enough to get it done. I think if they took a vote right now, the Democrats, you would get 75% of them say they wouldn't consider doing that. I know... Probably should wait and talk about this tomorrow when we have a lot more time. But I know a lot of you have heard about this Blackwater situation, and that's Blackwater Security, Blackwater USA. For those of you that are newbies and haven't heard, they're a private mercenary organization that sends people to Iraq, private contractors. And they don't exactly have the best of reputations, especially within the Iraqi people's community. They're known as killers, hired killers. They're not there to rally around the flag or make you and I safer or whatever it is that we're supposedly sending our military there for. They're there to make a buck, period. They've got a contract that's worth like, I don't know, $400 million, something like that. But there was this little matter of this shootout in Iraq on Sunday. And now we have the Iraqi government saying they want them out of there, announcing that they're revoking the license of Blackwater USA. As well they should. They don't trust our military to guard people like our ambassador there, Crocker. No, they got these Blackwater people around. And the employees of that firm were involved in the Baghdad shootout that killed at least 9 civilians, including a mother and her child, this past weekend. And, of course, the details of the whole thing are somewhat cloudy. But the whole thing began after a car bomb exploded near a State Department motorcade in downtown Baghdad, which is so safe, you know. Blackwater and U.S. officials, and we have reason not to believe either one of them, as you know. But they're saying they exchanged fire with armed attackers. But then some people who claim to have witnessed the shooting told the McClatchy newspapers and organization that only the Blackwater guards were firing. And we've heard stories. We've had people right on our program live from Baghdad talking about the Blackwater guys, how they go around shooting at people just for sport sometimes. And this latest episode has gotten a lot of press all over Iraq. And so the Iraqi government has canceled the license of Blackwater and prevented them from working any place in Iraq. And now I know Condi Rice is trying to get them to revoke that, to take back their revoking of the license of Blackwater. But so far, there's... been no movement to do so. But currently, Blackwater has over 1,000 employees working over there. 1,000. And if the Iraqi government is able to kick Blackwater out of the country, it's going to take away the guards for many of their diplomats and engineers and reconstruction officials. And they say that there's no way at all that the State Department's Bureau of Diplomatic Security could ever have enough full-time personnel to staff the security function in Iraq. So it's going to pose a problem. Personally, I've always felt that there should be no such thing as private security guards in the country that we're occupying in the first place. Sends the wrong message. They're lawless. The Iraqi government can't control them. Our military doesn't control them. They're above the law. They can't even be prosecuted. So the Iraqi government does the only thing they can do and revoke their license. We'll see if that works. But these people have a very dark past. They've angered many Iraqis. They are mercenaries. They have run roughshod over the people in that country. We do know for a fact that at Abu Ghraib, some of these contractors were involved in the abuse incidents. We also know for a fact that not a single one of them was named in any of the Army investigation. None of them were charged or prosecuted or punished. And there are more than one. There are quite a few private security firms operating in Iraq right now, but Blackwater being the most visible of all of them. And we all have forever emblazoned in our memories the pictures of those contractors that were working for Blackwater who were killed in Fallujah. Their mutilated bodies hanging from the bridge and all that. You remember that. You also remember that in 2006, in December, a Blackwater employee allegedly drunkenly killed a guard for the Iraqi vice president. And instead of being tried and held accountable in Iraq, he was smuggled out of the country and fired by the company. Nothing happened to him. He committed murder. This past May, Blackwater guards were involved in shooting incidents on consecutive days in Baghdad. The Interior Ministry over there says they've received reports of at least a half a dozen incidents in which Blackwater guards allegedly shot civilians, far more than in any of the reports they've had against any other countries or companies. And the thing is, they're not going to have to go to court in Iraq. They simply won't. They're untouchable. And that just should not happen. Don't know why it does. Heard this interesting exchange. So many of you like Jack Cafferty, and I do as well. But I heard this interesting exchange with him on TV and thought I'd play it for you.
Howard, nice to be with you.
You shoot off your mouth a lot. That's your job. But you bash the Bush administration so often that you've become a hero to some on the left. I mean, just in this book, in the first few pages, you talk about Bush and company harming America. You call the president deluded, and you speak favorably of impeachment. Do you consider yourself a left-winger?
No, I don't. Not at all. On the contrary. In fact, in the early days of the run-up to the war in Iraq, I was a right-winger, if nothing else. I bought the whole song and dance about WMD. I was caught up in the national hysteria that followed 9/11 and was as captive to the political manipulation, if you will, that took place of all of us. And I include myself. I was drinking the Kool-Aid on the run-up to that war, and I spent a lot of time on American Morning here on CNN supporting the administration and supporting the war. So, no, the answer to your question is no. I don't consider myself a left winger.
All right. On occasion, on
this is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
This is Billy Shears. Join us this Friday on Foxed Up at 10 a.m. Eastern. We'll take a look at John Lennon's Thanksgiving 1974 onstage appearance with Elton John, marking the end of John's lost weekend.
That's when Yoko and I got back together the night I performed with Elton at Madison Square Garden.
Be there this Friday on Foxed Up at 10 a.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Whatever gets you through the night, it's all right.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Shook it up. I never loved nobody fully. Always one foot on the ground. And by protecting my heart. sounds I hear in my mind. All of these voices I hear in my mind. All of these words I hear in my mind. All of this music, and it breaks my heart. When it breaks my heart. Suppose I never ever met you. Suppose we never fell in love. Suppose I never ever let you kiss me so sweet and so soft.
Back to the Guy James Show. Thank you, everybody, for listening in today. Glad to have all of you. What I consider the best informed audience in all of radio. You most certainly are. You've proven that to me over and over again. As promised, we have our guest with us right now. We have Doug Henwood. Doug is the editor of the Left Business Observer, and he's the author of the book Wall Street that we've discussed on this program. And Doug, welcome to the program.
Good to be here.
We wanted to have you on today. We've been discussing Alan Greenspan today. And
it was a rich topic.
Yeah. Well, I find it so interesting that that so many people, the pundits on TV, have talked about and used the word revelations that came from Alan Greenspan over the weekend. I particularly the one about the war in Iraq being about oil. That wasn't a revelation to me, was it to you?
I don't think it's a revelation to anybody, but it's the kind of thing you're not supposed to say in polite discourse. So I think he's sort of violating the norms of the elite. They don't say things like that in the open, but I think just about everybody. I mean, you don't even have to be very politically radical to think that the war in Iraq is best about oil. I think that's a pretty widely held opinion. You're just not supposed to say it on TV.
Is Alan Greenspan doing himself? I mean, I know he's selling books. I mean, I know that. making a lot of statements, doing a lot of interviews right now. But in the eyes of the American public, having this knowledge of it's about oil and having the knowledge about the Bush tax cuts and all that, does that do anything to help his long-term reputation when the public finds out that he's known these things and understood these things all along and let it go on anyway?
Well, his reputation is a mystery to me. I've never understood why he was so revered and has been for the last nearly 20 years. When he was running the Fed, just take a quick review of his record. There was a dollar crisis. There was a stock market crash. There was the final stage of the 80s leveraging mania, which led to a big bust, like 3 or 4 years of economic stagnation and a terrible job market. We then had recovery, but it took a very long time to take effect. And we had the Mexican crisis in 94. We had the Asian crisis in 97. We had the Russian crisis in 98, long-term capital management. And then we had the whole dot-com insanity, which then went bust. And so Greenspan had to orchestrate another rescue. And that led to the housing mania and now the housing bust. So I just see a whole series of disasters and crises and bubbles on his watch. So I really don't understand why he's so revered. I think, to answer my own question, though, I suspect it might have something to do with the fact that the richest 1% of the country got an awful lot richer during the Greenspan here. So since their voices are disproportionately influential in the media, maybe that's why he's so revered. But it is very strange now to hear him saying, oh, yeah, there really was a housing bubble. You know, this is years after when he could actually have done something about it. It's amazing to hear him speak so frankly about the invasion of Iraq when almost no other public official will speak so frankly. Why didn't you say this earlier? And his admission that he really thought poorly of the Bush tax cuts or Bush fiscal policy, at the same time he's giving him political cover to get away with it. It's all just remarkable. This guy, is admitting that he was kind of a fraud, and he's somehow getting plaudits for it.
That part is remarkable to me right there about the tax cuts. When he said, I was kind of shocked when he said that the other night. Oh, yes, I was for tax cuts, but not for the Bush tax cuts.
I think he's offered tax cuts if there were spending cuts that went along with it, but political reality is that it's very, very difficult to do spending cuts, especially in the case of the Bush administration, which was very busy ramping up spending on the military and domestic security. So I don't know what he was thinking by endorsing the tax cuts. It's also very strange that this lifelong Republican hack has declared that Bill Clinton was the best president that he worked with. It's kind of strange. Like, now you tell us, Alan.
Well, I could see some eyes rolling back in their heads of top-notch Republicans when he said that.
Well, that's the most entertaining thing about this. I think this is causing tremendous distress for the Bush administration and the Republican Party, because this guy was, you know, the godly Saint Alan, and now he's just dumping all over them. So this is quite an amusing turn of events. If you just want to view politics as a spectator sport, or was it Hollywood for ugly people, as they say?
Yes, yes.
This is very entertaining.
Well, do we give, you know, now we've got Bernanke, and we hear Greenspan saying that he agrees with Bernanke on it. Do we give that position more credence than it deserves? Do they have more power than, or is the White House really and truly running the Fed, and he's just a figurehead there?
Well, the Fed has some independence. It's a complicated thing. It's kind of like the Supreme Court, you know, that old saying about how the Supreme Court reads the election returns, and the Fed is to some degree the same way. They can't go completely against the political will, but I think a lot of people in Congress and the executive branch like to have the Fed because they can sort of deny any responsibility for it. You know, they can say the Fed will sometimes feel like it has to create a recession or at least push the unemployment rate higher, and at least until very recently when the financial crisis broke out, they've been trying to do that. And then Congress can say, well, you know, it's not our fault, it's the Fed. The Fed is independent, but they know that this is what Wall Street and big business want, and so they can't go out and be as honest as Greenspan is now and say this is what Wall Street and big business want, and say, well, you know, it's not up to us. We have to respect the independence of the Fed.
I thought he painted Congress as a bunch of dolts, a bunch of idiots, when he started talking about how he went in front of them several times and gave them a complete snow job, and then sat there looking at his statements and really having a laugh over it, how he just went around in circles, didn't say anything in the Congress.
Well, it is funny to watch those Q&As with the head of the Fed before the senator of the House Bank Committee, because it's clear. Barney Frank is a smart fellow. He knows what's going on. A lot of those guys really don't. And they just, it's very easy to snow them. They practically snow themselves. So it was quite a performance on Greenspan's part. I think he once said, if you understood what I said, then I didn't phrase it correctly.
Yeah, that's I like that line. I love that line. do you think Bernanke now he cut the prime a half a point today? And I don't know where the market's standing at the moment, but I know it was
the
up.
The stock market loved it. A friend of mine who works on a trading floor said that big cheer went up when the decision came down, and the Dow Jones closed up, I think, 330 points.
Ah, 330.
They loved it. But the bond market sold off and gold rose, so those folks seem to be worried that it's an inflationary move.
How much did gold go up today?
I don't know the answer to that. I just got this secondhand.
Yeah. Well, we're looking at, and we've discussed this on our program ad nauseum about the foreclosure crisis that we have going on in the country, and how the Fed's trying to bail out some of the lending institutions, and it doesn't look like a pretty scene. It doesn't look like a rosy picture on the horizon economically in this country to me.
No, I think we're in for a rough patch, and I really don't know that this move that the Fed did today can make that much of a difference. We have a lot of people, for one reason or other, who have mortgages that they cannot afford. Either they had grandiose notions of what the house prices were going to do in the future, or they were cheated and lied to by their bankers, or they lied to their bankers about their income, or they just were forced into it because of the necessity of where they live and the housing market in the area. There are a lot of reasons for it, but what it boils down to is there's just millions of people with mortgages they can't afford, and the Fed cutting rates is not really going to change that situation significantly. So this is a problem that's going to either take some kind of serious intervention, like a foreclosure moratorium, which would be a very good thing, or it's going, if they don't do that, it's going to take maybe years to work through this.
Now, you're the editor of a publication called the Left Business Observer. I didn't look, but is there a Right Business Observer?
that's CNBC.
Yeah. Well said. Explain to us why the difference and why you come at this from the and you'll have to admit, yeah, I mean, I think you're swimming upstream as business commentators normally do. I think most of them are on the right. How come you came at it from the left?
Well, I thought there are a lot of the writing on the left about economics and business was just not very well informed. So I thought there was room for somebody who had political conviction but also knew the world and knew the language and knew how to decode it and make it accessible to non-expert population. So that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to sort of mix two things at once because I do spend a lot of time immersed in this world of sort of specialize in finance to some degree, what central banks are up to. So this is often a very arcane and difficult world to understand. So I try to figure it out and then explain it to people who might have a suspicion that there's something bad going on there, but don't exactly know how to put their finger on it.
Well, is it far more complex than we laymen out here see? I mean, you mentioned that you try and explain it in ways that people can understand. It is difficult to understand the world economic foundation and a little move here with the stock market today with the Fed and all this. It's hard for the average American to understand how this all fits together.
Yeah, well, I think some of the technical details are very, very complex. And if you get into like some of the securities in the mortgage market that have caused trouble in recent months, these are extremely complicated. Even bankers don't understand them. There's a very small handful of mathematicians and physicists who put these things together, and they're about the only people who understand them, and it's, you know, a very small little fraternity of geeks with PhDs. But a lot of the broader issues, you know, that part's easy to understand. The finance really is fundamentally a system of ownership and power and control. The stock market is about ownership. Stockholders own and control corporations. Bondholders have tremendous influence over governments and have very strong influence over economic policy. So that kind of political angle of finance is quite easy to understand. Now, go back 100 years, late 19th, early 20th century. Many American workers and farmers put a lot of effort into understanding the monetary relations of their time and developed a lot of expertise about it. We don't have that anymore. People don't pursue it that same way, but it's really, you know, people put their minds to it. It's quite understandable, but I think the financiers want to keep it as obscure as possible so that really nobody questions what they're up to.
So are your reading habits like Greenspan? Is that your pleasurable reading statistics and so forth every day?
Well, I do get some pleasure out of that, but I don't think I'm as one-dimensional as he is.
He certainly seemed to be on that.
I haven't read his book, but from reading a review of it, it seems like he just doesn't seem to have much of a personality or a personal life. He's maybe two-dimensional. Maybe one-dimensional is too harsh, but at least two-dimensional. There's something missing in people like that.
I didn't know he was a musician. I must admit, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think he was a fairly decent amateur clarinetist, but I don't know where he went with that. Gave it up long ago, I suspect.
I have one of my listeners wanting me to ask you, and I don't know where your expertise is on this. Could you ask your guest about the rise of the Canadian dollar against the U.S. dollar?
Usually when that happens, the Canadian dollar, like the Australian dollar, is considered very resource sensitive. So at a time when commodity prices are rising over their inflationary pressures, which has been the case over the last couple of years, then the Canadian and Australian dollars usually rise against the U.S. dollar as a result of that, because both of the countries have lots of gold, and Canada also has a lot of energy resources and a lot of trees as well. So the basic commodities do very well in inflationary times, and that's probably what's behind the Canadian dollar rise.
They're asking me to pick your brain now. For those of us who can't afford gold, people always like to hoard gold, and when they think times are getting tough, what's the average Joe do right now with his money and his investments?
Do stuff that's very prudent and cautious. Don't do anything very reckless. Just keep the money in the bank or short-term government securities. Gold, you know, if you can afford a little bit, it's always a good hedge, but over the very long term, the gold price goes essentially nowhere. So I think a lot of people are waiting for a repetition of what happened maybe in the late 70s and early 80s when gold went crazy. But and gold has had a decent run in the last couple of years, but you can't expect to make a killing in gold normally. The whole point of it is to preserve purchasing power. I don't think we're going to see some sort of wild inflationary rout like we saw in the 1970s, but that would be the reason to get all excited about gold.
Sure.
I don't think we're seeing that again.
Any new books on the horizon?
I am working on a book about just who the American ruling class is today, trying to figure out, back in the old days, the early part of the 20th century, up until, I don't know, about the 1960s or so, the Northeastern WASPs really ran the country, and then the Northeastern WASPs have sort of fallen by the wayside as a social force, and I'm not really quite clear on who really is the American elite these days. I think they're a very fractured group of people who are just in the business of making money and don't really have much in the way of thinking about politics or the situation of the United States and the world or any of the things that are threatening the stability of the system, which I think looks a little rocky right now. So it seems like the grown-ups are too busy raking in the cash to think about anything longer term than that. So
I think that's particularly true. I think it's particularly true right now. They don't care about the United States standing in the world. It's the old bottom line and grabbing the cash. And if the U.S. Stays up there, fine. If it doesn't, I still have mine.
Yeah, I think that's very much the attitude, and I think it's a lot like what we saw in the late 19th century when there were just egregious displays of conspicuous consumption and wealth and securities fraud and all kinds of things. It's very much like the present. The only difference is that there was actually a large radical movement in those days too. There were socialists and populists and labor radicals causing a lot of trouble. We don't have those this time around, but we do have an extremely greedy class of rich people who really just care about accumulating as much as they can as quickly as they can too. The time horizon, which they think is very, very short right now.
Yes, yes, indeed. Doug, I want to mention your website. It's leftbusinessobserver.com, right?
Yes, it is.
Leftbusinessobserver.com, just the way it's spelled. You'll find a lot of good reading on there. Doug, I want to thank you so much for being our guest on the program today.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Appreciate hearing from you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Right. Bye.
Doug Henwood, again, he's the editor of Left Business Observer. He wrote the book Wall Street, and you all know where that went, and it's interesting. He's a facts and figures maven, but the thing is he knows the history of those facts and figures as well, which is important if you're going to understand the financial world. Where are we at here? Looking at the where we're at on the... Okay, yeah, we're going to pause for a break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
In the chilly hours and minutes of uncertainty, I want to be in the warm heart of your love and mine. To feel you all around me, and to take your hand along the sand. Ah, but I may as well try and catch the wind. When sundown pales the sky, I want to hide a while behind your smile, and everywhere I'd look, your eyes would find. For me to love you now would be the sweetest thing. 'Twould make me sing. Ah, but I may as well try and catch the wind. Leave all my blues behind. For standing in your heart is where I want to be and long to be. I bet I may as well try and catch the wind.
Ah, yes, Donovan, catch the wind. A little stormy here around the Guy James studios right now, and the official Guy James Show puppies, Sophie and Kukla, are, they're like little puppies when there's storms, thunder and lightning, and so they cower over in the corner looking for protection. Don't worry, kids, I'll protect you. Dogs always are really sensitive to that, aren't they? Thunder and lightning. Really, really sensitive to it. Don't know why. Love my Yorkies. Oh, yes, I do. We brought them to the studio today. And they've been quiet and been very good, but they're not very happy right now. We had some rather extreme weather here. I mentioned earlier, tornadoes. Looked out the door and saw one, and very imposing. And it struck not very far from here as the crow flies, and a lot of damage. So hope you're not having any of that where you are today, and I hope we don't have any more of it either. Hey, speaking of telephones, did I speak of telephones? Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. Phil up in Daytona Beach.
Hiya, Phil.
Hi. I caught the early part of the show, and I had to go out and just caught the tail end of your last guest. But I was up in Washington last week, too, and I think and Cindy Sheehan mentioned it in her talk at the rally, and it was kind of the theme, you know, that we the people have the power, but only if we use it. You know, we're allowing these criminals to keep doing what they're doing. And you asked initially in the beginning of your program, you were asking how can, I guess, one of Bush's cronies signed an oil deal with the Kurd, you know, the Kurdish part of Iraq. Is that what it was?
Yeah, the Hunt family.
Yeah. You know, and I think what we need to do now is get beyond being surprised or out, you know, or just how can these guys do it? How the answer to the question, how can they get away with it? Because we, the people, are letting them get away with it. And I want to include our corrupt Congress in that group called them, you know.
Well,
people aren't going to, nobody's going to come along and stop this, people. It truly is up to us. And
does it not appear to you, Phil, like the Democrats in Congress are getting ready to knuckle under again?
Oh, sure.
Doesn't it?
All part of the plan. They're the ones who extended the occupation, Guy.
Yep.
Pelosi and them extended the occupation with that $100 billion to make this thing to think these criminals, these millionaires in that millionaires club up there in Washington. I know you were up there a couple weeks ago. You know what they are, Guy.
Sure.
They're whores, all of them, except you might have a handful. And it, every day that we talk about it and don't do something about it, we've got a handful of GIs in Iraq in a war, that occupation on a lie, that die. And for every one of them, there's got to be 100 Iraqi civilians, and their only crime is living there. And the responsibility rests with us, Guy. It rests with us, we the people. And 6 years into this, man, you know, if you're still ain't doing something about it, it's you're up in the complicity zone, you know.
Well, that's the sad part. We're this long into this, and still, it's going on, and it just makes me absolutely livid, Phil. I know it does for you too. Every Democrat politician I hear now saying, "Well, you know, we can't defund them. I'm not going to do that."
Bullshit.
I'm thinking, really? Well, no, it is bullshit. Why can't you defund them? I mean, explain that to me. But there's never an explanation with it. Just, well, no, we're not going to do that.
Well, see, that's what we have to start. I didn't participate in the lobbying last week. I went up with Colonel Bob Bowman. If you're not familiar with him,
yes.
You know, he's got a new website, thepatriots.us. He did here this guy, he's in his 70s, a real American hero, and he's dying of cancer from Agent Orange from his time in Vietnam, he's lobbying Congress, man. And what they did this time around, they put together a lobbying package. And I know I don't want to put you in an awkward position, but I will tell you where this package is located. It's located on DC 911 Truth, you know, and regardless of the 911 truth and all that, they put together a packet along with Dr. Bowman and Sue Udry from, she's the lobbying person national for the United for Peace and Justice. They got together to put this presentation, and they went to Congress, in the halls of Congress, and they said, you know, they're not taking any of these bullshit answers. They're saying, now you know. You know, we know, and you're culpable. There's something called misprision of treason. When you present something that looks like a treasonous act, you know, you have some kind of evidence or whatever, and just the fact that they've launched these wars in which Americans are dying, and that in itself could be deemed treason, you know, Bush and Cheney. But I'm drifting off.
Well, it is treason for me. Phil, let me ask you. How did your experience go? Did you take a bus up? Did you fly up? What did you do?
We were lucky. We actually asked Colonel Bowman if we could ride with him. We've had him speak. He was our speaker for a town hall we did. Geez, it's going on 2 years, January of 06, on Iraq. And, you know, the congressman, Micah, didn't show, so we put a photograph in an empty chair. And, you know, it was pretty good. And, you know, he was the initial featured keynote speaker for the first ever Veterans for Peace conference. You know, mm-hmm. Since then, Kucinich was this year, Cindy Sheehan was a couple of years ago. You know, and he was the speaker four times. He's one of the founding members. I encourage everyone listening to go to his website. This guy is a true American hero. ThePatriots.us. It's non-political. It's not Democrat. It's not Republican. It's we got to get our country back. But what I was saying that we have to do more. Cindy Sheehan said at the rally on Saturday that we got to start shutting things down, man. We got to start getting the colleges, and the campus anti-war network is starting to really kick it up, and we got to stand behind these kids and start striking, start shutting things down, start shutting federal buildings down. Cindy Sheehan said, "We've got to talk to everybody." I just got gasoline at the Citgo. You know, I'm not going to give ExxonMobil my money when our kids are dying for their profits. You know, and I'm telling these kids about different things. You know, 9/11 truth, whether you want to touch that or not. I'm telling them about it. They can look at it if they want. Telling them about the Downing Street memo. I do this every opportunity. You can say something to somebody and people are overhearing. Media has been stolen from us.
Oh, it has. You know, we had our friend Glenda on talking. She attended the rally.
Listening.
She said she was very heartened to see that big group come over from George Washington University, about 250 of them, she said. And, man, I'll tell you, when we start getting the college students involved and getting them educated and active in what's going on, in spite of there not being a draft, if we have that kind of interest coming from them, then that'll be a great thing. We need new blood. We need young blood in this movement, and that's very important.
And those of us that are listening here, we can get together with them and support them, and we should. We have to do more than what we're already doing, because what we're already doing isn't enough.
No.
And whether we wanted it or not, we have this responsibility. We're in the know. And so we got this responsibility, whether we wanted it or not. And I did want to say something regarding your last guest. I know you were talking about the economic crisis.
Yeah, we got about 20 seconds, Phil.
Okay, please, folks, look into the Federal Reserve. There was a great documentary put out called America, Freedom to Fascism. Just Google it. And our country was stolen in 1913 by the same people that are running us now.
Very interesting background and organization, the Fed, that's for sure.
Please look into it. Guy,
Phil,
thank you so much.
Thanks for calling, Phil.
You betcha. Bye-bye.
Well, here we are at that time of day. Down to the end of the show once again. Where does the time go? I do want to remind you to listen you're listening to the Guy James Show here in the Head On Radio Network. Thanks to Billy Shears, music director. Do also want to remind you that this is a listener-supported program, and we can use your assistance. Don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you tomorrow, gang.